Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 412.
This week on the podcast, for the first time in 5 years, we almost had a real infrastructure week. Almost.
And we've got a review of all the dumb ways moderates waste money.
Plus, are we talking about the fucking debt ceiling again?
And I do not have enough closet space for a repeat of the toilet paper shortages.
Plus, who fixes an oil pipeline when nobody knows who owns it?
And we freed Britney. But now, who's in charge of worrying about her?
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
Yeah.
You guys, we were so close to Infrastructure Week finally meeting infrastructure legislation. I know. And yet,
we
missed last week, and then we thought, that's okay, because there will be some action on infrastructure this week, and that's really all
and
we're following.
There? I mean, there was a lot of action.
Tons of action.
Nothing to show for it, but action all over the place.
Action aplenty. Yeah. And it's the end of the week, and where are we? A place where we don't have infrastructure legislation.
Right. And we have no official timetable for getting it passed.
Yeah, as you might recall, this was all supposed to be sorted at the end of September.
Right.
And that was what we were waiting for, knowing full well that that would not be a date that had anything happen on it.
Right.
And so things got pushed further. Because they had to, because there was no consensus on any aspect of the strategy, the legislation, the price tag, any of the things that you would need some sort of consensus on to pass legislation were unconsensed.
Yeah.
And so now we are sort of in wilderness, if you will, because we have had a lot of action on it, and we're going to talk you through some of the action and also why this is not necessarily a terrible thing.
Yeah, well, and also, not only we'll tell you why it's maybe not a terrible thing, but we'll also tell you, you know, we're going to get into this more, but, like, certainly if all you did this week was watch the news, then you probably saw, you know, the news media trot out all of their old, you know, progressives versus moderates tropes that they've used for every presidential campaign or whenever, you know, the squad wants to do something and Pelosi's mad at them or whatever, you know. I mean, they literally just, I think, repeated... They just ran reruns of what they said when they were talking about the Bernie Sanders campaign, essentially.
That's right.
And that's not what this was. So we're going to get to that in a little bit. We'll tell you sort of like
where we are, which is nowhere,
as
but
you told
also
us, which
everywhere.
Is nowhere. Right. So we were supposed to have a vote on, well, I think Monday, actually, initially, because it was the 27th. That was the deal that Pelosi had struck with the Mod Squad, the Gottheimers of the world, those terrible people. Right. So then she ultimately pushed that to Tuesday, which was hilarious. As if the
like,
one
push
day
it to
was
December.
Going to,
like,
right.
Don't
exactly.
be an idiot.
Right. And the CPC, the Congressional Progressive Caucus, was like, no, we are going to kill this. And I think based on decades of evidence that they would cave on this, everyone thought that they were going to cave on this.
Us included. I think, I mean, I was the whole time, all weekend, my mom was texting me or talking to me and was like, do you think they're actually going to pull this off? And I kept being like, no.
No, I didn't. You and I weren't having the same conversation.
Like we were having that conversation with Grant. Like person that we have ongoing political conversations with that is a progressive was talking about this with us last weekend, and nobody believed in the progressives.
Like, everybody was talking about it. Like, hashtag hold the line was trending on Twitter. Like, I mean, everybody had really dug in on this, but I don't think anybody really was buying it. Right?
No one believed.
So anyway, so
what evidence would we have to believe? When have the progressives ever held the line?
Right, exactly. So then she moved it to Tuesday and they were like, no. And, you know, Pelosi is sort of like known for not bringing up something that is going to fail. I mean, both speakers of both parties generally are not trying to be embarrassed on the House floor.
So true.
So she moved it again. They moved it to Thursday.
Again, an optimistic choice.
And again, right, exactly. And all of this time, there's a lot of back and forth. There's a lot of finger pointing about, you know, there's a lot of people sort of like publicly distrusting the other side. We'll talk about that in a second, too.
Also, by the way, when we say sides, all sides here are Democrats. We're not even talking. Republicans are not involved in this at all.
Right.
This is a conversation that we are having that is about conservative Democrats, moderate Democrats, and progressive Democrats, because it would be a very different corporate Democrats.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
It would be a very different thing if Republicans were even remotely involved in this conversation, but they are actually like out in Looney Tunes land. So they're not even in the conversation.
Well, there was like a hilarious like thing floated when Pelosi like moved it to Thursday that like maybe they had gotten some Republicans on board to vote for the bipartisan bill because 19 Senate Republicans voted for it. And I was like, House Republicans are going to are not going to save Nancy Pelosi from herself.
No.
Like, that's not what's going to happen here, guys.
That was never going to be the outcome of this situation.
No, never. But, you know, I did get scared at one point, though, because, like, the progressives were sort of, like, it seemed to sort of, like, tweak their messaging a little bit when they were, like, talking. I think I panicked, texted you when this happened, too, because they essentially said something to the effect of, like, well, if somebody has a plan that will show us that we're going to move forward on the larger reconciliation bill, then we'd be willing to look at it. And I was like, oh, somebody's just going to promise them that they'll vote on it next, and they'll agree to it, and then they're going to get hosed like they always fucking get hosed.
Vote on it next.
But then...
didn't happen.
That didn't happen either. And they dug back in, and they were like, a vote is the only thing that we're going to allow on this. And I was like, great.
What a time.
They're
so,
doing it.
Meanwhile... they have a couple name now, right? Manchin and Sinema?
Oh, yeah, Manchinima.
Manchinima?
Uh-huh.
What a mouthful. They've been running back and forth to the White House all week.
I mean.
Kristen Sinema has basically only taken breaks in the White House when she's had to go to fundraisers and then fake doctor's appointments that were actually
there,
also fundraisers.
She was there four times in the same day. And that was that day that she had, like, that $5,800.
Of course.
I loved hearing about all of her.
Oh, my God. The one thing that the media has been doing right, the only thing, has been letting us know that every time Kyrsten Sinema leaves the White House, what high dollar fundraiser and what the plate costs at her high dollar fundraiser for every single event she's left
for. Yeah, I even saw that on CNN, and that is not something that you're finding on corporate media very often.
Not often at all.
Because she's the type of person that would protect them. So
exactly.
Yeah. So that was a nice change of pace.
Yeah. So, and then on Thursday, Joe Manchin offers up a $1.5 trillion price tag, which is silliness. Keep in mind, so the $3.5 trillion is being framed as the progressive choice. But I want to remind everyone that the original progressive proposal was $6
trillion. And AOC was griping about $6 trillion not being enough. So
if you ask progressives, there is not an amount of trillions that's enough for this infrastructure bill.
Yeah.
And also, everything is infrastructure. If you ask Joe Manchin, nothing counts as infrastructure besides constructing literal roads. And we should means test those roads if we can. Should make sure the roads aren't too rich. So this is... when you hear the framing of it in media that it's like a war and these extravagant $3.5 trillion people are just out there being unreasonable, keep in mind that they came down like more than half of what their initial conversations were.
Yeah.
Because I think at $1.8 trillion was something they were discussing. Like, I mean, they have been discussing trillions beyond $3.5
totally.
For a long time. So they are already at a compromise point. And Joe Manchin is offering silliness. And then he also... At least he offered something, because he is offering that in a vacuum, because no one knows what Kyrsten Sinema wants.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I think, like, you know, certainly I am not here to tell you to stop hating Joe Manchin, because keep doing that. But at least, like, you know, because a lot of the back and forth this week that you heard was about, like, we can't even negotiate with these people because we don't know anything.
Right.
We don't know what programs they want to keep. We don't know what their top line number is. We don't know what, you know, tax rate they're comfortable with to sort of, like, use as the pay-fors for these things. I mean, they literally just didn't know anything. Manchin has hinted at things, like, over the last couple months. So he has always been the less problem child of the two, even though he's also experienced
in this role. Sinema has sort of emerged into this role in an effort to be a star.
Yeah.
And because of that, I don't think she realizes what the expectations are on someone in this role.
Yeah.
Because you do have to offer something. You can't just flit around being unreasonable and going to high dollar fund. I mean, I guess you can, because she's doing it.
Right.
But I mean, like, that's not what this role is.
Yeah.
So I feel like she's
really emerged as, like, the number one villain here, which I'm fine with.
I mean, she's awful. So
exactly.
She's awful, and she's in a state whose other senator is a Democrat. So she can get her shit. And also,
she's having a lot of trouble back home right now.
They
busted up that fundraiser at the spa the other night.
Yeah. Oh my God, I forgot about that. And also, I'm not surprised to hear that, because I feel like when every time that you hear that you see, like, an old tweet or an old comment or whatever from her, it's always, like, things about how, like, Obamacare is not enough. And, like,
oh, I know.
I mean, all of her initial platform points are, like, way more progressive than where she is right now.
CNN was doing a story that they were running almost daily that was tracking Kyrsten Sinema from her early days as a Green Party organizer.
Yeah.
And they had footage of her wearing things even crazier than what she's wearing now.
That's hard to imagine, but
like,
here we are.
At crazy, like, you know, environmental rallies that she was at and things like that. And, like, so that was, they've really been doing her, like, hilariously dirty this week. And I've been enjoying every single frame of it.
Sounds highly entertaining. I'm very pro it.
Yeah.
And then, so the other sort of parallel conversation that's been happening alongside cinema, us not just knowing what she wants or what she's up to, I can't imagine. I don't, what does the White House know that we don't know too? Like, we don't know anything about what is known or not known by anyone.
Yeah.
But also, so Jayapal finally responded to Manchin's 1.5 proposal and said, that's not going to happen, which thank God, because he's fucking around right now. But also, one thing that got torn apart on Twitter, at least in sort of progressive circles, which is something we've been talking about quite a bit in the last year and a half on this podcast related to a different issue. But his big takeaway, his top line thing that he's been going around saying about his proposal is he wants there to be more means testing on the programs. And I just want to go on the record once again, as we have gone on the record before about this, and remind everyone that means testing is not fiscally responsible because it's a waste of fucking money.
It costs money.
Moderates are always out here trying to pretend like they want to save money in all these complicated ways where they're going to have a mechanism to do whatever. Who does the means testing?
Yeah.
Government people have to do the means testing, and that means someone has to know how much means people have to test.
Yeah, you have to have... You have to have an infrastructure itself to means test.
Exactly.
Things. He's going to have to pass infrastructure bill.
To fund means
testing. The means testing.
So at the point that means testing is like more expensive than just giving people shit, what you actually just have at the end of the day is that it's a cruel proposal.
It is.
It has nothing to do with making systems work more efficiently. It has nothing to do with an efficient use of money.
Yeah.
It has to do with cruelty, and that's it. And I have a second rant about a similar type of moderate proposal that is the same issue for after this. But we went on this exact rant because of the stimulus checks.
The stimulus checks.
We said, and we stand by, I think. I stand by. Brent, I think, stands by.
I don't even know what you're going to say, but I
stand by it. The stimulus checks should have just gone out to everyone.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because there was no benefit to means testing stimulus checks when it meant that people who needed them weren't going to get them.
Yeah.
And it also meant that we had to have this expensive, you know, slow process for getting the checks out. Whereas they could have just fucking given everyone, you know, $1,400 or whatever, called it a day, moved on with their lives. And it probably would have done more to stimulate the economy, and it probably would have been quicker and more effective, and also would have left everyone feeling more positive.
Yeah.
Than if they hadn't done
and
that.
And that's the thing. I do agree. I do stand by that. Right. Another thing that I stand by in regards to those stimulus checks is that also, when you means test things, especially some of these programs which are already going, you are essentially, you're going to fuck over a lot of people.
Yeah.
And obviously, that's what means testing is. But like, specifically with those, with the, you know, the checks that went out, the Democrats ended up means testing them even more than Trump did. Because when they sent the second ones out, remember the cutoff, I think, was like $75,000, where it had previously been $100,000, or don't quote me on those numbers. But like, we actually, the Democrats being in charge of all chambers of government, actually sent out less money than
that's
Donald Trump did. And like, also, you know, one of the things that's in this larger bill is an extension of the child tax credits. Are we going to further means test that? And then like, further like fuck over starving children? Like, is that is that his plan? I mean,
because remember with means testing, A, somebody's making $1 more than the limit, and that person is not getting assistance.
Right.
B, and this is something I think we don't talk about enough, I've been talking about it a lot on Twitter and a little bit on the podcast, is the time tax. The fact that this means that every single time you apply or benefit from a public program, you have to fill out some kind of complicated fucking paperwork that you get wrong the first time. You have to call somebody. No one answers the phone. You try to call unemployment. No one's on the phone there. I remember when I moved to California and we had to go and call the unemployment office from an office where we'd pass around the phone because there was no way to get anyone on the phone otherwise. God. Like, these kinds of means testing programs end up requiring the recipient, who is already likely heavily taxed just as a person who doesn't have enough of things, it requires a lot of their time and energy to navigate the programs. It means that some people don't get access to the benefits, not because they don't qualify for them, but because they don't know how to access them. You know, there are so many ways in which we accept this kind of time tax in our everyday life. The perfect example is health insurance, because if you've ever tried to get a health insurance company to actually pay a bill that they're supposed to pay, it involves you calling everyone and complaining to everyone and fighting for a million years. And why is your time not worth anything when it is them that make an hourly wage to do that work? That happens all the time because of the way we conceive of public programs and because we means test everything.
Yeah.
So if you want to apply for public assistance, it is not as simple as just being like, oh, interesting, I qualify for public assistance, I should go apply for that. that until I can find a higher paying job. It's like, you have to visit a social worker, and then you have to figure out how to fill out the paperwork, and the paperwork is always wrong the first time. And then you have to go back to the, so you spend hours waiting and filling out forms and getting bank statements and all sorts of crazy shit that you, as a person who already doesn't have enough food, do not really have time or energy for.
Right.
And that is what you're imposing on people when you further, totally. You know, further extend means testing into different arenas. So when we want a child tax credit, like when we say that we should not further means test that, we also mean that we should not further time tax those parents who maybe they don't need the money. And you know what? That's great, because then they can put that money into something right. that is a business that someone benefits from. Sure. They can buy their kids something stupid at a small store, whatever. That that doesn't mean that the money doesn't actually like benefit anyone. It just means that the money is actually like in circulation somewhere. Yeah. So it actually isn't worth the cost of doing that, because A, the economy benefits from us giving resources to people who don't need them anyway, for the most part. But also, we're talking about like a tiny percentage of people. Because think about who's actually rich enough that they don't need any public assistance, that they can't benefit from any public assistance. Right. Like almost nobody in America. We're talking about a tiny sliver of society.
Yeah.
And is it worth us robbing people who actually need benefits of their time, their energy, their resources, their sanity in an effort to prevent Jeff Bezos from getting $1,400 from the U.S. government? Like, not really.
No. Yeah. You're right.
In any case, I think we have accepted this sort of like time tax as if that's just like a part of life.
Right.
And it actually doesn't have to be. That's, I think we have like Stockholm syndrome. When certainly in the healthcare field, we definitely have Stockholm syndrome about that. But I think in a lot of areas, we have like a certain amount of Stockholm syndrome where we expect government resources to be a pain in the ass to get. And we shouldn't, our expectation should be that when we want to, as a society, provide services to ourselves, society, that we should make that as painless as possible.
Yep.
Poor people have enough problems.
Yep.
In any case. So fuck Joe Manchin is the top line of my argument. My proposal is mostly that. Right. With that in mind, we want to talk a little bit about how this was covered and also what we should actually be taking away from it.
Yeah, for sure. So one thing that like I even myself needed reminded of, just because you sort of watch enough news and this gets framed as like, you know, an argument and, you know, two sides hating each other, that like this really was just a negotiation.
Yeah.
Like
it's what government's supposed to do.
It's what everyone is supposed to do. And like, even, you know, I heard Katie Porter put it in a good way. She was on, probably CNN. That's, I feel like, what I was watching most of the week, even though they were doing a terrible job. But I just was imagining MSNBC doing a worse job, so I didn't change the channel.
I don't think that it wasn't your imagination. That was just like your experience with television.
Yeah. But she said, she was like, you know, a lot of times, she said a lot of times legislation in Washington is like a crock pot. You put it in and then you have to wait for days and months for anything to happen to it. And she was like, and sometimes the only way to get it out of the crock pot is to put it in a pressure cooker.
Oh, this metaphor really extended. Really,
I mean, she went like Midwest mom, which is kind of her energy. She's not from there. She's from Orange County.
Well, no,
like,
she is from the Midwest.
Oh, well, from there, right.
She is a Midwest mom in her heart of hearts. She is just from Southern California.
Yeah, and I thought that was a really good way to look at it, in the sense that like all of this was in an effort by leadership to make everyone come to the table here, right? They were just trying to create the pressure, you know, within the party and just in DC generally to like make sure that everyone knew that like now was the time to like fucking do this.
And I think also the thing that we can sort of take away from the back and forth on this, because what we have become accustomed to is legislation coming up, there being a minor amount of disagreement about it, and then it just dying. Because of the way the Senate operates right now, nothing ever comes up for a vote, and so everything just dies.
Yeah.
This is a bill that Democrats know they have to do something about. So the fact that everyone is both at the table, but also the fact that the progressives are playing a constructive role, even if you look at how leadership is treating them, you know, we were talking about this a little bit at brunch, leadership is treating the progressives a little differently than usual, because when they want to kill legislation, they say progressives are the problem. They ruined everything. We can't do anything because these crazy socialists in our party, and they walk away from the table entirely.
Yeah.
And you are not seeing them walk away from the table this time. No. You are seeing them hand-wring as much as they always hand-wring. But the fact that everyone's staying at the table is actually what you want. because you want something to happen, and you know that you have a bunch of people that have different interests, and they need to come together and make something happen, and that is actually what's happening here.
Right, exactly. Well, and that framing of progressives versus moderates wasn't even right anyway, and you saw progressives reminding people of this. Of course, moderates weren't, because they wanted it to be framed that way. But this was really the entirety of the Senate, except Manchinima, right? And the entirety of the House caucus, except maybe 5 to 7
the
people.
The Gottheimers.
All of the Biden administration, right? Biden himself, it was against those handful of people, right? So it was like, I think Jayapal was the one who kept being like, it's 90% of Democrats versus 4% of Democrats. It's not the progressives versus the moderates here. It's like, we're all on the same page. And I thought that was actually, I feel like I talked to a few people who were mad at progressives, right? Because like it was being framed in a way, like it made it appropriate to be mad at progressives because nobody decided to do any harder work in their journalism this week. but I kept reminding people, I'm like, whenever the progressives get on the wrong side of Nancy Pelosi or Joe Biden or whoever, they are happy to find any and all cameras that they can to throw them under the bus, to throw shade at them, to tell them that they're not being team players. You did not see any of that this week. You didn't see it from Pelosi. You didn't see it from Biden. You didn't see it from Jen Psaki, Kamala Harris, Chuck Schumer. No Democratic leadership was out on TV saying that the progressives should fall in line.
No.
Because you know why? Because they didn't fucking want them to.
No, they need them right now.
They need them.
And also, I think the other misunderstanding about this framing of progressives versus moderates is that this is a progressive piece of legislation, but it is actually a moderate piece of legislation.
Right.
So the reason that you're not seeing people throw the progressives under the bus right now is because this is legislation that's actually in line with their beliefs and interests. The people who are not falling in line are not moderates. They're fucking conservatives.
Yes.
And so this is not an issue that this is progressives have fallen in line. They have agreed to a proposal that is a compromise for them, but that they see a benefit in. That is what they are supposed to do. They have played ball and they have done the thing that they're supposed to do.
They have agreed to voting on the bipartisan bill. Exactly. They hate that.
That's a dumb bill. The reason they hate it is because of its dumbness.
Right. Yeah.
But what you are seeing right now is not progressive legislation failing.
No.
You are seeing moderate legislation
You are seeing progressives coming to the aid of moderate legislation.
To protect moderate legislation.
Yes, that's exactly what you're saying.
So the framing of it, I mean, the reason that we have this sort of like the Overton window is always so far to the right, so it's like hard to know what's ever going on in our government. But just a reminder that nothing we're talking about here is progressive policy.
No.
It's all the most moderate of policy.
Yeah. Well, that's what I, you know, and I think that this is another note that I feel like will be lost on Joe Manchin, because Joe Manchin likes to consider himself the most powerful person in the world. But, you know, I saw an interview with Bernie Sanders this week, and he was like, look, it is my view that if we're going to do healthcare legislation, the legislation that should be in this bill is Medicare for all.
Right.
But I am but one man. And there are 47 senators who don't want that to be in the bill. So I understand that I am not going to get that.
Right.
In this
I'm
bill.
Currently voting on now, a bill that does not have my dream policy.
There are some people who would probably wish that he would kill this bill for that reason. And like, maybe that's a separate discussion. But like, it's actually, the left are being the team players right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's like, we have lost the language necessary to parse that.
Right.
Because, and this is why I think, you know, this is a Trumpian framing of this battle. This is a vote blue no matter who framing of the battle.
Sure.
This is something that we as Democrats have to be really careful about how we absorb this kind of messaging when it comes from media, because this is actually how government is supposed to work. Now, it's supposed to work that the Republicans are also at the table. I get that that's something that we can't
that's
have right now.
That's what made it easy to frame as like infighting.
Exactly.
Right.
It's not infighting, though. It's just the political process. And to believe that Democrats should always, quote unquote, fall in line and that the negotiations should all happen behind closed doors and that we should have no idea what's ever happening until they come up with one of the worst bills you've ever seen and then fail to even vote on that. That's a Trumpian framing. That's a dictatorship. That's not what democracy is supposed to be. Democracy is supposed to be messy and kind of annoying, and everyone is supposed to be in there for their own interests, and and collectively they're supposed to come up with something. Now, that's not how government's been working, and that predates Trump. I'm not suggesting that. That's a Clinton era innovation, if you ask me, that carried over into Bush and Obama administrations as well. But like, that's a sort of new Democrat framing of how the Democratic Party should operate. But that's not actually a productive way to get policy through. And I think we have for so long been watching sort of Democrats just fail at, in part because they can't seem to get along, and in part because they're just weak-willed. Yeah. But we've been watching them fail for so long that we forget that this is actually what they're sent there to do.
Right.
We actually invited them to go to Washington to have this argument for us so that we didn't personally have to have this argument. Yeah. That's their job.
Yeah.
So we don't need to fall into this trap of like, you know, a war, sort of like the sort of wartime autocratic dictator style language that we're using to talk about this, because this is, I think, actually the most constructive debate that they have had in decades.
I think so too. Well, and to that point, that kind of one of the things that has been annoying me this week that is not shocking because Democrats are classically bad at this, but the framing of, really the larger bill has been terrible.
Terrible.
I feel like the only thing that anybody knows about it is the price tag. Right. I mean, there are people who are calling it the Build Back Better agenda.
Let me tell you.
Which was always terrible and never meant anything and doesn't
give
you
a... I mean, that's the frame. That's the saying that I was like, oh, that sounds like Selena Meyer came up with it.
It does,
when he started going on about Build Back Better. I was like, these are just words.
Yeah, new Selena now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And that has to... One of the ways that they could be increasing pressure on Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema is if America knew better what was in this.
Yes.
Because it's all shit that everybody wants. Nothing in that entire... I mean, we don't know what's in it yet because we don't know what will ultimately make it because we don't know what the price tag is. But like, in theory, there's money for childcare in there. There's the extension of the child tax credit. There's paid family leave. There's lowering of prescription drug costs. There's raising corporate taxes and taxes on the wealthy. I mean, we could go on and on and on, but nothing in there pulls any less than like 70%.
Exactly.
And so like, but nobody knows, right? If you pull all of these individual things, they're like, yes, we want that. Give it to me now. But like, there's America at large has no grasp that it's those things that are in this larger bill, and that's the fault of the party.
Yes.
That's like,
yeah, that's a messaging fail.
The Republicans would have called this, you know, free puppies and ponies. Yeah, exactly, right?
And
they could. If ever a bill could be called something like that,
exactly,
it would be this one, right? So like,
it's also, it means that the only people, you leave the people who you as leadership have created the most distrust in to do that messaging for you, because the only person I have seen try to explain to anyone what's in this bill is AOC on Instagram.
Right,
and
sure,
like, as much as I certainly trust her perspective on what's in the bill, I know that Nancy Pelosi is not trying to engender trust in her Instagram explanations of what goes on in Congress. So if you leave only AOC to explain what's in the bill, then who is going to explain to constituents in Manchin's district what is in the bill? Because they're the ones that AOC's district is not the problem here. It's not that they haven't called her enough to tell her that they want these things.
Right.
The problem is that the residents of West Virginia are not calling Manchin enough to tell them they want these things. Who is going to explain to them?
Yeah.
That's who
not
you need
senator.
To do. Not their senator. But that's what you need. You know, you need people to explain to Josh Gottheimer's district
if there was any,
what they need.
If there was any movement, like as a mass movement behind this bill, like then I think it would be able to be passed easier. But like, for there to be that type of movement, people have to know what the hell it is. And that means somebody has to explain it to them, and nobody has.
That's right. A classic foible. Classic Democratic foible.
Yeah. But, you know, one thing that we wanted to do on this week's podcast is sort of like kind of explain how we got here, because I think the anger that did come toward the left was this, it was anger around why don't they just vote for this and then believe the moderates or the corporatists or whatever we want to call them, that they will just take up the larger Build Back Better bill next.
Right.
Like, can't we just vote on this first and then vote on that next. And I think that there were a lot of people who like couldn't figure out why that would be the case. And I think that's really at the core of what was happening this week, essentially. It was that, and the reason that they wouldn't do that is because there's a wild lack of trust, and that lack of trust has been very much earned.
It's a fool me once kind of situation.
Right. And they've been fooled
like 100 times.
1,700 times. Right. Yeah, exactly. So like, which is another reason why we thought for sure that they would not hold the line on
totally
this.
Totally. They get fooled every time there's an opportunity to be fooled.
Always, right?
The amount of fooling that
goes on. Nancy Pelosi tells them nicely that she's going to do something for them, and they believe her, and then she doesn't do it. It's almost a daily occurrence.
Right. The tale is old as time. So if anyone is wondering why progressives would not have gone for that plan, then those are people that have been actively tuning out of all other news.
Yeah, but I think just generally all the times that Nancy Pelosi has done that, of which there are too many to list, but certainly, you know, treatment of progressive challengers, and not even progressive challengers.
Just
I mean,
the
D-Trip even gave a lot of money. Well, I don't know if they technically did, but like there was a lot of corporate money against AOC this year.
Right.
So even as a sitting member, they tried to oust her. So
and also they're choosing arbitrarily in open seats. They're choosing conservatives to go back, you know, to go out like Nina Turner's district. Nina Turner's election. Like they're going to back corporate Democrats in places where they have no pre-existing relationship with those candidates.
Exactly. And in races that they have claimed in the past that they're going to stay out of. That was an open race. Right. And then they, you know, there was the blacklisting of the campaign firms who worked for progressive challengers, but they've now supposedly stopped doing. So we'll see how that goes. But there was that, you know, there's Bernie times two.
Right. There's all the Bernie
Nina Turner herself. Right. Well, she's running again, by the way. She filed paperwork anyway. So hopefully I've been assuming that
she should run all the time.
I think that she
should. What is she, if not a person who can just go and have a rally?
Yeah.
It's like, that's what her job is, basically.
But surprise, the left doesn't trust the moderates. I mean, like, of course.
Right.
And also, you know, the next thing that we're going to talk about is the other reason that we got here is because these two bills got split up in the first place. Obviously, the only reason that anybody would have been in favor of splitting up those bills was so they could vote on one and then immediately kill the other one.
Like, that's common sense, friends.
If you believe Josh Gottheimer when he looks you in the eye and says, oh no, I'm going to vote for this other bill, like, he's
get
not.
Get out of Congress,
like,
if you believe that.
We know why you're in favor of splitting these up, because you want to vote for one and then you want to kill
the
other one. We're not idiots.
The reason.
There would be literally no other reason.
No. And they're claiming it's because they wanted a bipartisan vote on one of them. Do you know what you don't need ever when you are running for office against other people? Is a chance to celebrate with them a victory that you created.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I just, like, this...
Like, what's the benefit of having a bipartisan vote on that?
Right.
Nothing.
This chase for bipartisanship is always weird to me, because, like, no one is going to remember that, like, we, in a bipartisan way, decided to spend pennies on, like, physical infrastructure for us to drive our fossil fuel cars around on.
No.
Like, that's, you know what I mean? Like,
no, and also, the other thing that I have always thought was interesting about this issue in particular in doing, like, a tiny bill that's actually just for roads and bridges is everyone credits their local government for the road work. Nobody thinks the federal government's doing any road work. It is the reason your roads get paved right before election year every year is because a local official went and got local money to do that.
Right, or called Domino's
or called
Pete Buttigieg.
Right, exactly. Like, the reason that that is happening and the reason that it is visible to you is because a local official went and fought for you. It is never because of... So this happens all over America. Every 2 to 4 years, all your roads get repaved. And you're like, I wonder what happened. And then you're like, oh, it's an election. It's like a joke that you say it's an election year.
Yeah.
And they repave them in a way that is just shitty enough that they will only last to the next election.
Yeah.
And then they repave them again. Yeah. And nobody is ever going to think to themselves... Congressional Democrats did it.
No
one is ever going to credit the Congressional Democrats for that work. They are going to credit their local state assembly person, who is the person who actually gets the roads repaved every year.
Yeah.
So this is like already this chase for bipartisanship for a policy that the federal government will never get credit for, that won't be visible to anyone because it will be a minor increase in road work, which nobody likes in the first place. Like, this is just, it's like a losing messaging strategy no matter how you slice it. The things that are going to be visible and creditable to the federal government in your life, in anyone's life, are things like childcare. They are things that are in the $3.5 trillion bill, but they are not in the lame-o, you know, bipartisan bill.
Yeah, totally. And I will say that, you know, we've been directing a lot of our disdain at Manchinima, and I'm here for that. Again, I will tell you again to keep doing that. But, like, also, the reason that these two got split was because Biden decided to split them up because he wanted to chase every bipartisan infrastructure gang in town.
Yeah.
So, like, if Joe Biden at all had a headache this week per what was happening in Washington, it was of his own doing. because he also, was the one.
When has a gang, a congressional gang, ever achieved anything?
Right. Well, anything good.
And I mean, anything at all. The Gang of Six, the Gang of Eight, the Gang of Four. None of these gangs have ever resulted in policy.
Yeah. Well, and I'm gonna skip on our notes here because we're talking about how they never come up with anything good. I think part of what ended up being sort of funny about this week is because I think, you know, the bipartisan infrastructure bill was so terrible because it came from one of those gangs that had a bunch of Republicans. Yeah. Like, we know it's terrible because 19 Republicans voted for
That's right?
So it was so bad that made it very easy for progressives to really dig in their heels and be like, no, we're going to vote no on that because they don't actually care whether
that passes. If that passes or not,
and
nobody
that,
cares.
And that is was a bad move on the part of the bipartisan gang. Because the way that you convince people to vote for a bill that might otherwise be terrible is to have some goodies in there for it, right?
So
you see this
you
all the time.
Blame them for voting against...
Right, exactly. We're going to pass a $1 trillion Pentagon budget, but we're going to make sure that you get free puppies.
Exactly.
And so then Democrats will be like, oh, well, we have to make sure that the people get the free puppies. So then they vote on military
They vote to
spending.
Go to war.
There were none of those things in the bipartisan infrastructure framework.
They are so bad at doing things in the Senate. I can't even tell you. Like, it is so wild to me. They understand so little about negotiating and human behavior and just psychology.
Right.
And I don't understand how they got so isolated from humanity that they lack even that basic understanding of how things work.
Yeah.
This is a misunderstanding that boils over in the Senate constantly.
Oh, totally. 'Cause
this is why I think it's so fascinating that everyone kept telling me, as you know, Kirsten Gillibrand was sort of like single-handedly passing the Zadroga Act, being like, well, nobody likes her. And I was like, who fucking cares if nobody likes her? Is she passing bills? What, does she need to be friends with everyone? Who cares if they're friends with... Like, if you don't understand enough about what your job is there to understand that being liked is not actually your main priority, passing stuff is, and if you do that by being hated, that's your business, then you don't know what your job is.
Right.
Which they don't... Not most of them don't know what their job is.
Well, I know. Yeah. The other thing that was, sort of interesting about this week, because obviously, whether she said it publicly or not, it became clear by the end of the week that, Pelosi and Schumer and Biden were all on the side of the progressives here because they want to make sure that this larger bill does get passed. And one of the things that is making it harder for the $3.5 trillion to get passed is some of these House members that they have propped up against some of the progressive primary challengers. So, again, in a similar way where I said if Biden had a headache this week, it's of his own doing. If Nancy Pelosi had a headache this week, also because of her own doing. Because some of these people are people who had credible primary challenges in safe Democratic seats.
Yeah.
Henry Cuellar's district is the bluest seat in Texas. He has been the Democratic representative there since the beginning of time and winning with large margins. That man is a Republican.
That's right.
He voted with Trump as many times as most Republicans did in the 4 years that Donald Trump was president. Every time I saw him on my TV this week, I was like, why is that man there?
Yeah.
And he's there because of Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi has been protecting him for decades.
Right. The D-Trip has played a large role in making their own lives harder.
Yes.
Because you know what I think would be really beneficial to them is if they had candidates who had anything to run on. I think it would be helpful as if you're a body whose entire job is to get people, Democrats, elected to Congress. One thing that I think really makes that job easier is having literally any platform point at all to run on. Any one single thing.
Yeah.
And they routinely go out of their way to rob every Democrat of the ability to run on anything.
Yeah.
And that can't be a more effective way to keep a Democratic majority. It can't even be a more effective way to keep their big pharma money.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know. This is a waste of everyone's money, including corporate money, including all the, you know, shitty money that's going to D-Trip.
Yeah.
Like, all of the time that they have spent protecting do-nothings is long game-wise the dumbest thing that they could possibly be doing.
Like, get rid of him. Everybody's lives would be easier if he wasn't...
Everybody's. And you don't have to get AOC elected in that district just because he's gone.
Well, right.
You can have someone who's also terrible.
Right.
You know, but just less terrible.
Less terrible.
Less terrible.
Yeah.
Corporate terrible, not Republican terrible.
Right.
There's different layers of terrible.
Yeah.
And they are often going out of their way to protect the highest level of terrible.
Yeah, totally.
There is also another thing, though, that has made the action more exciting on this bill, And that is that last year, I think we talked about it on the podcast, the CPC changed a bunch of their rules. Because it used to be that they were just this free-floating caucus that anyone could be a part of. It became trendy after, you know, to be a progressive at a certain point. Yep. Remember when Hillary Clinton called herself a progressive who gets things done?
Sure did.
That's the kind of person that was claiming they were progressive at a certain point. And so everyone joined the progressive caucus.
They previously, they had about as much structure as like the, you know, the Cut Flowers caucus.
Right.
Right?
Which is so typical of progressives, by the way, to just open their doors to anyone and then have no structure.
But people would literally join the caucus and use it for clout to fend off primary challengers from their left. There are people who are in the Congressional Progressive Caucus who are also members of the New Democrats Caucus. Right.
That's which contradictory, is like, friends.
Right, that's like their mortal enemies.
Right.
Right? And then also in the Blue Dogs. I mean, so there hasn't been any, there's been no sort of like governing, you know.
Yeah, I think Adam Schiff might be in the Progressive Caucus.
He might be.
And he's also a Blue Dog.
He's also a Blue Dog, or was.
You know what? Let's.
Yeah.
Let's assume
The Blue Dogs are essentially the New Democrats now, although I think there is still a Blue Dog caucus. But anyway, so that changed about a year ago. And we've been sort of waiting. People on the left who knew that changed have been waiting
for
a moment like this, essentially, to see whether some of the changes actually made a difference, and it's clear that they did.
Well, one of the big changes that I think is really the most basic thing you need in order to be a caucus is have a whip.
To have a whip and to have like leadership. And they didn't even previously have leadership. I mean, they did. They had two co-chairs.
Like the co-chairs.
But like that was also a thing that like Nancy Pelosi would pit Jayapal and Mark Pocan against each other, like publicly, as a way to sort of like make sure that the progressives were sort of like all over the place.
Yeah.
So they now have one leader. Yes. Right. They have a whip. They've never whipped votes before.
Then you're not a caucus.
Then you're not a caucus. Yeah, you're the Cut Flowers caucus.
You're the Cut Flowers caucus. Right. You just are an affinity group. That's not the same thing at all.
Yeah, exactly. So that they also
I think the whip is Ilhan Omar, right?
It is, yeah.
And everybody loves Ilhan Omar.
Totally.
You may not know this as a person who lives in outside world land, but I feel like one thing, not you, Brent, you listener. I think one thing that has always fascinated me is that as much as you hear media just tearing her apart constantly, I have never heard an unkind word about her on the Hill.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody
likes
her.
They always come to her defense also whenever anybody is... Yeah. You know, I feel like she's engendered a lot of, like, you know...
Vitriol.
Vitriol. And, like, so I think because of that... I mean, people may like her for other reasons, too. But, like, you also see them having to come to her defense a lot.
Yes.
And they always do it. And probably because they like her.
I think she's well-liked. I have always been shocked because this is not, you know, other people who also no one would have any reason to hate or not hate on the Hill constantly are getting shit talked by other congressmen. You know, AOC is the only one example. Rashida is also a bit of a controversy at all times. Like, you know, the
I could see her being a pill also.
Oh, though. I'm sure she is. Probably in a glorious way, but in a pilly way too. Yeah. But I mean, I have never you know, unlike Cori Bush, who I also actually haven't heard unkind words about, but she's newer to Congress.
Yeah.
I have never heard anyone say anything about Ilhan Omar other than that she's lovely.
Yeah.
So I think that she's a genius whip for the progressives. That was a long way of me saying that you need a whip.
Right.
And B, if you have a well-liked member, have them whip votes.
And the reason that you need a whip is because you want to be able to be voting together.
Yeah.
And they have never done that either. There's never been any sort of like vote. And that is the key rule that I think is going to help them moving forward.
Yeah.
Because now they have actual rules as a caucus that if 2/3 of the members support something, then they have to vote as a block. And additionally, if you vote against that block after the decision has been made, there are now rules about expulsion.
Yeah.
So some of these people who are also in the New Democrats, who are also in the Congressional Progressive Caucus, if they start voting against...
They're going to have to think about which caucus they actually want to vote with.
They're going to have to think about which caucus they
want
to vote with.
Which is what you want in a caucus.
Right.
You want someone who is loyal to your caucus and not 17 different caucuses and also just voting however they feel like on everything and just using your clout to get votes, to steal votes from your challengers.
Yeah. So I think that is one of the very exciting developments from this week, because like as we were sort of like curious whether they were actually going to hold the line, I think so many of us thought no, because historically they wouldn't have...
Well, they didn't have the tools to historically.
They didn't have the tools, and now they do, and they're going to function a lot more sort of like the Blue Dogs do this, or had historically done this.
This is what the Tea Party does. If you're wondering why you're always having to hear about the fucking Tea Party, it's because they vote as a fucking block.
Right, exactly.
It's not because they have good ideas.
So they are now in a much better position to say no. Jayapal can now actually say to Joe Manchin, that's not going to happen.
That's right.
Because she knows that it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Because she's whipped the votes and she knows how many people there are to kill his stupid infrastructure bill that they don't give a shit about anyway.
That's right. Yeah, I feel, first of all, I can't believe it took this long to get them to do this.
I mean,
this is basic governance stuff.
Well, this is also outrageous. Like, I think proves your point that you have always, you know, I am sort of the mind that we should just kill everything and just burn the whole thing to the ground.
Right.
You are always like, we just need to elect more of these people. And that has clearly been correct. So,
I mean,
I still would like to burn it down a lot of times. And that's kind of what they're doing here.
No,
so I feel like this has just proven both of us correct.
I was going to say, this is what you can do when you elect more people is burn things down.
Right. There's no reason to whip the votes of four people.
That's right.
You don't have to whip those votes. You just go into a room and then
you... If your votes are just like Paul Wellstone and like Dennis Kucinich, then like there's no vote whipping.
You don't need a whip.
No.
Yeah,
there's no whip necessary.
Yeah.
That's not... hopefully, considering how many more progressive voters there are right now, we are looking at an unwieldy caucus that you would have to whip. I was waiting till the progressives got so unwieldy that they had to come up with rules.
Well, and
I cannot
believe, because there's like 100 of them now, and you know that there's not 100 progressives in
there. Believe how long it took after the 100 people showed up for them to do that. In 2012, it was 2012 where Hillary Clinton said the progressive who gets things done thing.
Yeah, I think
wasn't
so.
It?
Maybe, or maybe it was when she was running against Bernie, which was 2016.
Maybe. You're right.
Remember.
Actually, I can't remember.
Yeah.
My point is, being progressive has been trendy for a while now.
It has
multiple
been.
Terms.
Well, and I think the other thing that's important about this is when you sort of have a group that you can count on, it gives some of the other people who maybe would not be as emboldened, like
some cover.
Because I saw an interview. There have been people in the CPC who you and I have joked about being in the CPC. I saw an interview with Debbie Dingell on who's in there.
Is she holding the line with them?
Yes.
What a world.
And that's what she would have never been publicly saying that she's going to vote against a bill that Nancy Pelosi has brought to the floor. She just wouldn't have. But
the
now
other
she
thing
can.
Is once you have enough people, you can figure out fundraising strategies for these points of, you know, for these positions. You can figure out how to protect each other so that you're not in a situation where you would very much like to hold a progressive line, but you just don't have the ability to because you'll get left out in the cold. The idea of having the caucus is you keep everyone in the warm together.
Right.
I don't know what the opposite of being left out in the cold is, but that felt right. But I mean, now if you have a progressive caucus, people can afford to be more principled when there is some structure around their principledness, because that makes it seem like it's not them out on a limb alone. It makes them not vulnerable.
Right. Yes.
So like if someone like Debbie Dingell has been walking around wishing she could be a real progressive this whole time, but
now
felt
she
like she couldn't, maybe she can now. Exactly. Yep. That'd be nice.
It would be.
Before we move on to the debt ceiling, which I can't believe is a sentence I have to say. I want to just briefly, I teased earlier that we were going to talk about one other dumb moderate thing that is not, this is not specifically related to the infrastructure bill. It's related to a story that was on the front page of the Times this morning. But I wanted to talk about another way in which moderates tend to waste money in an effort to save money. And just keep everyone on the lookout for that, because I would guarantee that any bill that has any sort of compromise funding coming from the moderates also includes some corners like this. So there's the front page of the New York Times this morning was about a CEO who runs a homeless services organization in New York City, makes $1 million a year. And this, but as just like a quick comparison, the commissioner for homeless services in the city, I believe, makes under $200,000 a year. So the commissioner who's overseeing these programs makes less. But also this guy has had issues with fraud. He has a background in, I think, like for-profit prisons or something like that. I mean, the fact that he's making this money is raising some eyebrows. And because of a situation that's been happening on my block, we've been talking about a similar issue where the head of a different homeless services organization that we know to be quite ineffective makes $500,000 a year.
Yeah.
And these are all almost exclusively publicly funded organizations. And it's an example of something that I also have been dealing with as a 9/11 health advocate, which is our tendency to farm out public services to private companies to run them as if that's a more efficient way to run them. And it almost always results in higher expenses and less service delivery and less oversight as well.
Yep.
And so I just want to say, as we're talking about infrastructure spending and how to best spend the money, and we're talking about how not to waste money
and how not to
means testing, all of those things. The other thing that we should be on the lookout for, the other thing that we should say is a no-go for us, is privately run public services. The stupid way to run public services.
Yeah.
Because it costs more money 100% of the time. And if it doesn't cost more money, it's because labor practices are not so great. So if you are thinking to yourself ever that the best way to run any sort of infrastructure-related program, any sort of healthcare-related program, any sort of service program like homeless services organizations is to hire a private company to manage those for the city, the state, the federal government, and you are seeing that as a legislative priority, what you should do is say no thank you. We should not do that.
Yeah.
There is almost no time that works out better for the people being served. It almost always adds bullshit to their lives.
Yep.
And I was only thinking about it because of the sort of combination of this Times article and thinking about Joe Manchin's means testing argument. Sure. And I was like, what's another thing moderates are always in favor of that is so dumb? And this came to me immediately, in part because I have been on the phone with NBC's investigative unit about the private contractor that runs the nationwide provider network for the World Trade Center Health Program.
Right. I was going to say, you talk about some of the private companies that you have to deal with in your book, right? Don't you?
Yes.
And some of the call centers and things.
And not only that, but the problem is actually much deeper than what I describe in my book, because this huge investigative report came out this month about some things that I had been complaining about internally in the program that have to do with their contractor not fulfilling their obligations, but also with bad labor practices, with the fact that this is an incredibly expensive contract that's not actually providing the services it's mandated to provide, that the law itself, the spirit of the law itself has been violated by them multiple times because of policies they have come up with.
Oh, wow.
And that the oversight organization, which is a federal organization, is often sort of, in an effort to make their jobs easier, is creating policy to conform to the limitations of this private contractor as opposed to expand them. But, you know, none of the people who work for this contractor have the same benefits as the public agency employees. None of them make the same kind of money. So they don't have the same job protections.
Yeah.
So, you know, everyone loses out on both ends. But this is something that we see a lot with the services that interact with the most needy in our society, the most vulnerable in our society. And it's something that I think we oftentimes, you know, we are blind to because we sort of treat these kinds of privately run public services as if they're interchangeable with our nonprofit sector.
Mm.
And I think it's a mistake it's one thing to have nonprofits that fill in gaps that the public sector has left open. And we should seek to fill those gaps publicly, but it's obviously you can never fill all of them. It's another to contract private organizations to run
services.
Who are worried about profit, or even if they're not worried about profit, who don't answer to the public in order to run a service that is a social service, that is meant for all
of
us. And so that's just another moderate policy tidbit that I was thinking about that I wanted to get in before we talked about the debt ceiling.
Yeah, well, that's a very moderate, that's a very Bill Clinton public-private partnership.
Very.
You know, new Democrat deals, and the DLC.
That's why the thing that's so frustrating about it is 100% a Democratic policy.
For sure.
That is 100% a Republican policy.
Yeah, no, it is.
You know, I mean, it's a Republican proposal
that
Democrats have sort of taken to.
Right.
And because of that, it's never as simple as just putting funding into programs, because how the programs are managed ends up becoming its own obstacle course.
Right, right.
And a lot of the, you know, when we talk about things like means testing, we should also be talking about administration. And who wants to talk about administration? It's so fucking boring to talk about administration. And yet that becomes a big problem as soon as you contract a private organization to do any of the services that the federal government or the state government or the local government could be providing directly.
Yeah.
Any service that they are paying tax dollars for to a private organization could be provided directly by the federal government or the local government, or they can be done publicly if they can be done privately. Anything that can be done privately can be done publicly.
Right.
So in any case, that was a separate spiel that I just wanted to go on because of the times,
related,
but it was related. I just wanted everyone to keep an eye out.
Yep.
And now let's talk about the debt ceiling, or rather let's not talk about the debt ceiling, because here's a thing that I want to say about this debt ceiling conversation. I, like you, like everyone, hired somebody to go to Washington with my tax dollars to argue about this for me. Mm-hmm. I don't think this is an interesting conversation.
No, I don't.
I also don't want to deal with it.
Nope.
What I want is for somebody else to deal with it for me. Yeah.
Or for it to go away. I feel like there's been some people who have been advocating for the like this is the fakest of problems. Right. Yeah, exactly. We don't have to.
We like made up a rule and now we're like, well, we're going to violate the rule. So we're all going to die. Right. I guess I don't
like. We could just continue to keep our financial commitments without having to pass a law every year to to keep our financial commitments. Like,
what if we just pass a debt ceiling law that says the debt ceiling is as high as it needs to be to keep our financial commitments?
Like, what if we just don't pass it and then we still decide to send Social Security payments to seniors?
Right. Who's going to stop us? Right. Who's the police here? Like, I don't think the fact that we every few years get thrown into a full crisis over something that is a rhetorical device that Republicans conceived of much in the way that they conceived of Benghazi as a rhetorical device. Like, it's a meaningless conversation. Yeah. It doesn't mean anything to you or me or the economy or anything. It's a fake problem that we created and are now being forced to expend time and money solving.
Yeah.
Think about all of the savings to salaries, to the amount, all of the savings that we would have if we did not ever have to discuss this ever again. The hours, the work hours that are going into negotiating how to raise the debt ceiling could be used to negotiate literally anything else.
Yeah.
They could be helping people. They could be curing cancer. I mean, there are so many man hours going into what is a completely arbitrary and fake conversation.
Truly.
And, you know, then no one would have to worry, too. Yep. Think about the anxiety hours you would save yourself if the person you had hired to go to Washington to deal with this for you had just fucking dealt with it and you didn't have to. Because at a certain point, I'm kind of like, listen, I get that Republicans are being pills here and that this is not a problem of the Democrats' creation in the sense that they're not the ones claiming that they're not going to raise the debt ceiling. I also think that they should take some fucking responsibility and deal with it for me.
Sure.
I don't want to talk about it with them.
No, I know.
I don't want to have to hear about it. I don't want a single news report to grace my screen about it.
No.
I want nothing to do with the debt ceiling. I want it to go away anyway. So I really want nothing to do with it. But I mean, even if they're going to continue having this conversation till forever, I want them to do it without me. And they never seem to be able to fulfill that wish. It's like all the time, I'm just being inundated by dumb debt ceiling comments that I don't care about.
God, we had a debt ceiling. We also had to fund the government this week.
Yes.
Also, which we only did a patch for.
Like, I can't believe that we're back to these tactics.
I know.
One thing that I think that the Democrats should be thinking about, that I've been thinking about a lot, is we had a four-year reprieve from this stupidity. And it was because Donald Trump was the president. And while I'm not suggesting that that was because of him, obviously it was because, you know, the Republicans didn't want to pull that with a Republican president.
Yeah, right.
I do feel like when you think about the message it sends for us to constantly be hearing about this crisis coming, every time Democrats are in power, we have a crisis about funding the government. And Democrats, it's wild because Democrats would like to fund the government.
Yeah.
It is Republicans that would like not to. But we need to figure out a way to make this not our problem every time.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be their problem.
Yeah.
And I think
generally they get blamed for it. Thankfully.
It doesn't matter though, because they get elected after.
Right, yeah.
So what do we need to do to make it not about who gets blamed, but not but make us not hear about it?
No, right.
You know?
I agree.
Nobody wants to hear about this. Zero people want to be involved in this conversation. Another thing no one wants to hear about, pandemic shortages. But are those back? Apparently.
Oh my God.
You guys,
toilet paper? Again?
I cannot go through this again with toilet paper. There should be enough toilet paper for all of us.
Well, there is a not toilet paper.
It's just not in our houses. I was saying to Brent earlier that decades from now, children are going to wonder why old people are so fucking nuts about toilet paper, because we're all going to have to spend the rest of our lives buying 32 packs of toilet paper in order to feel safe. And this is something I've thought a lot about as old people have like elbowed me out of the way in my Russian neighborhood to get the last toilet paper on the shelf prior to the pandemic. And I've been like, you guys are insane. There's always more toilet paper. I did not realize. I didn't know.
They knew.
They knew.
Mm-hmm. God. Diapers now too?
Yeah. It's like people need diapers.
Yeah.
And also this means that diapers are getting more expensive too, which is bad because parents need to be able to afford diapers in order to use them.
Mm-hmm.
And as a society, we just are in general happier when there are diapers around.
I agree.
Societies without diapers are societies with babies peeing on things. And I don't want to live in that kind of society.
Or cloth diapers.
Oh my God. Nobody wants to live in a society. Sorry, environmentalists.
I know.
But nobody wants to live in a society with cloth diapers.
No.
I don't know anyone who actually hacked it out with cloth diapers. I have a lot of people. I know a lot of people who went in with good intentions.
Sure.
And I don't know anyone who left with those intentions intact.
No.
Not a single one.
Oh, man.
There's also an oil spill in Huntington Beach.
My God. Oh, yeah. nobody knows who's
it's an unknown pipeline. Just a random pipeline. Hasn't been determined. The owner of the pipeline has not been determined. Why are there pipelines whose ownership we don't know about running through the ocean right now?
I don't know, but that is a uniquely American story, I feel like. To quote George
There
W.
is
Bush.
Oil running through it. So the oil is coming from somewhere and going to somewhere, but we don't know where, and we don't know whose oil it is, and
yeah,
we don't know who owns it.
It's going to our beaches is where it's going
right.
to.
It's just going to the wildlife, to the wetlands. But like,
oh my God.
You guys, we can't be out there just not knowing who owns these pipelines. There should not be oil running through a mystery pipeline that the government can't identify. You should have to register your oil pipeline. If I believe anything.
Oh God.
It's that. And you shouldn't just have to register it with the U.S. government. You should have to register it with, like, the world government.
yes, exactly.
You should have to register it with, like, the U.N.
Right.
Pipeline should not be just, like, mysterious oil, you know, guzzlers just...
I agree with that. They should have to register
They should have to register.
Like, actually. yeah.
This is not an acceptable answer to the question of who owns the pipeline. But when you ask officials right now in Huntington Beach who owns the pipeline, what they will tell you is they haven't identified that yet.
Oh, it's not funny. I'm laughing. It's not
funny.
Well,
it's a little funny. Why is that a thing?
Oh, man.
Booster shots are out.
They are.
And we're boosted people.
Yeah, both of us are.
Yeah. We're this is the safest podcast you could possibly record. Listen.
Yeah.
I have to say this one more time because every time that shot situations come up, people get weird about it because obviously the world has not been vaccinated yet and it would be nice if they were.
Yeah.
And to that I say, yes, there is a policy that we could employ to make that happen. But that policy is not sending Pfizer shots that require like Dippin' Dots freezers to be stored rural villages.
Right, because I got mine and from my healthcare provider,
right.
by the way. It's not like because there are a lot of people, and I'm not even mad at these people, but I'm saying that there are a lot of people who are sort of like out there like either getting them in shady ways or going to a different state and presenting themselves as like a first time, vaccine getter or whatever. Like, and sure, fine, whatever.
Yeah.
But like, you know, we're back to that place where like everyone is just like making their own estimations as to what to do. But yes, like I think for all of the people who are like, there are other countries that need them. I agree with that. But like, my question to you is, should I have gone and made my appointment and then received my vaccination and then shipped it to just addressed it to India?
Right.
Right. Like, I mean, like they're here. We have purchased enough vaccination for every American to probably get 70 of them.
Right.
And as you pointed out, they all have an expiration date. Right.
Right.
Like, would
and
it be?
And they also require some special equipment. Here's what you do to make sure India gets vaccinated. You open the fucking patent.
Open the patent.
That's the policy.
Right, and make sure that there's an mystery.
And you invest in the infrastructure.
Right, or send people over there to also administer it.
Right.
I mean, like,
this is a logistics question.
Yeah.
It's not a question of, like, who's morally deserves them.
Right.
We get stuff we don't morally deserve all the fucking time here.
Right.
There's nothing moral about the fact that global poverty exists and we are not living in it.
Yeah.
There's nothing moral about the fact that Americans live in poverty and we don't personally live in it.
Yeah.
These are estimations we make all day, every day. There's nothing moral about the fact that for some reason, even in this time of greatly increased gas prices, our gas is cheaper than Europe's gas. Like, everything is unfair. So in a world in which everything is unfair, I think the thing that frustrated me most about this conversation at the beginning was that I heard anti-vaxxers repurposing arguments progressives were making to justify not getting shots. I heard people, you know, getting a shot at a certain point was kind of stigmatized because it was like, oh, you jumped the line. And we should have just been encouraging people to jump the line willy-nilly, essentially.
Yeah. Well,
because
you and I sort of were, but...
Yeah, no, but I mean, speed was the actual question.
Yeah, it was, right.
And it meant that they lost part of the messaging war, because part of the messaging war was having everyone feel like everyone else was doing it.
Right. Well, they were means testing it.
They were means testing the vaccines. And so my feeling is, if you are somebody who feels like you would want a booster or anything...
Yeah.
And... you know, you live in society where you can get one.
Yeah.
That shot is not going to someone in India, my friend.
No, it's not.
And well, it
also,
could be going to protecting your community from further spread.
And I can tell you from my own personal experience of getting the booster shot, there are already healthcare providers who are also sort of like making their own estimations on this too. Because I sat in my own doctor's office and marked a thing that I was immunocompromised. that I still don't know whether I am or not. I mean, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, no.
But I was at my doctor's office and just sort of like, well, they know whether I'm immunocompromised or not. So, like, they scheduled a vaccine appointment for me. So, like, I must be.
Right.
You know, like,
no, but I also think, like, we have this tendency to stigmatize individual behavior instead of social behavior.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you should stigmatize a profit-driven system that keeps the formula secret. Stigmatize a system that prioritized wealthy nations over other nations. Don't stigmatize individuals for going and getting vaccines that are available to them.
Yeah.
Tell them that that's a great idea and that they should, in fact, encourage their awful uncles to do it with them.
Exactly.
You know,
yes,
like,
yes,
tell
yes, yes.
them that it's such a great idea that they should spread the gospel. Because I think the thing that was interesting to me about, especially the early vaccine rollout here and then also this early booster rollout, because the new booster, the criteria is very vague. And it's sort of like, if you feel like you would like one, go and get one.
Right.
Which is like, do that then.
Right, exactly, yeah.
But it also, it means that people don't feel comfortable like posting on social media. Like the kind of voter behavior that you look
right.
for
and
where people-
you would
people...
want that when you're trying to move the entire society.
And also
to
you would
do...
want that because there are people in my life that I know have not gotten the vaccine that I would like a passive way to remind that they could safely get it.
Yeah.
I would like to feel like if I were to post about it, those people would at least passively receive the message that someone that they trust and that they love got the vaccine.
Yeah.
And I would like to do that without my friends jumping on me.
Yep.
And totally. That, I think, is, you know, you have to think about the public health messaging of an effort like this. And, you know, we fail with it with the flu constantly. Because how much shit talking
for sure.
about the flu vaccine have we done on this podcast?
Oh my God, I know.
I mean,
well, we both got that, though, too.
We both got that, too. Exactly. But I mean, like...
You can get that on the same day. You got that on the same day.
I got them on the same day.
Yeah.
Listen... It was fine, but also...
Your arm hurt.
My arm hurt.
yeah.
But yeah, I feel like we need to be smarter in... Now that we all understand how the gravity of the situation...
Right.
We need to be smarter about who we're stigmatizing for doing what. And also, I mean, this was something that I thought about only because it was something that AOC was posting about on her Instagram because people kept asking her, why did you feel okay about getting the booster?
Oh, yeah, right.
And, like, she works with a bunch of fucking goons. So, like, she should get the booster.
She should.
But also, she pointed out the question of why developing nations aren't getting these vaccines is a logistics question. It's not a question of, you know, it's not a question that can be solved by us not taking the vaccines.
Right.
So, my point is, socialize the blame, don't individualize the blame.
Yeah.
And maybe that's a self-serving thing to say, but also get your fucking booster if you can.
I mean, hello.
Like, what are we doing here?
Just get... And just
if you can
get
pretend
anything.
To qualify for that booster, just get in there.
I agree. Get it.
I'm not a doctor, but what I do know
is that
everyone should feel excited for it.
Yes, and that, like, the less people with the chance of getting COVID... Again, 2 years later, the messaging is the same.
Right.
The less people who have COVID, then
the better.
The better.
You want fewer people to have COVID. One great way to not have COVID is to get a booster.
That's it.
So, in any case, in final news, we freed Britney. We did it.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So she's acting a fool on the internet like she always has dreamed of. And we're just...
I know.
Now we can worry about her for other reasons.
And we'll have to.
And we'll have to because she has been robbed of an adult life, so she probably doesn't have the life skills necessary
to be
herself anymore.
Yeah. But you know what?
She deserves to learn.
She's still... That's exactly what I was going
to
say.
She deserves the freedom to learn.
Right. Even though she's now taken to posting nudes on Instagram.
Listen, that's her business.
it's ours now also.
Right.
But I mean, yes. other people are also doing this, and they are not under conservatorship.
That's right.
So I think that's the
message.
That's the point here, is that there are people who are sort of like rightfully worried about her mental health, and maybe we should be. Or maybe we shouldn't be. I don't know. What do we know? How can we know somebody's mental health based on their Instagram?
It's not
like
my business.
But it's not our business, and like she does not need to have her father, you know, stealing her life from her.
Right. Telling her she can't remove her IUD or whatever.
Right. So.
We did it. Society has.
Yeah. The Free Britney people came through.
One rich lady has been freed from a conservatorship. So.
I know.
Success.
Oh, man. Yeah.
That's the news this week.
Yeah.
Next week.
We did not do a story. Let's just claim intentionally, but on what's her name? Gabby
Petito. Oh, yeah. Gabby Petito, whatever
something
her name
like
is.
That.
Missing white woman syndrome.
Missing white woman
syndrome. Well, we can talk about it next week if infrastructure talks stall, because we might have nothing to report. So.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. We'll have plenty of time to cover that in
we
the
certainly
future.
Certainly will. CNN made time this week.
I can only imagine CNN. CNN had really been... MSNBC also has been making time for this. Every network has made a lot of time for this story. So
I'm sure they have.
So we'll have plenty of opportunities
we will.
To discuss it. In any case, that's the news this week. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.